son of a bitch.
Welcome back, listener. It's episode 23 of The Hard Men to Please. This is our yearly wrap-up for 2016, the best year on record for humanity so far. We're going to look back at the last 20 weeks that we've been doing this podcast and the year as a whole. And I'm Jared. And my right-hand man is Ethan.
What up?
And as a special twist surprise, the biggest twist of 2016... we're bringing on board you, the listener. It turns out your name is Ray, and you live in Austin, Texas. How are you, Ray?
Hey, I'm good. Yeah, and I do listen.
Yeah, welcome, so. Welcome back to this podcast for the first time on this side of the wall.
Welcome.
Yeah, I'm trying to represent the people. Hopefully, we'll see.
Yeah, there's also a functional reason for you to be here, which is that unlike Ethan and I, you actually did watch every single movie that came out in 2016, including two viewings of Lady Ghostbusters, I think you said.
Oh, yeah. We talked about that. That's the movie that I watched most this year, every day, actually.
And two movies with Wiener in the title is what I'm seeing from your list.
Well, any movie with Wiener automatically makes a top 10 list.
Well, he's got his likes and his dislikes, as we all do.
That's what makes a hard man.
Yeah, so we're looking back at 2016, and now that we're on the other side of it, we're recording this on the ball just dropped. It's now New Year's Day at midnight.
Ooh, it's the future.
Yeah, we didn't decide to go to any parties. Instead, we're doing this podcast. And 2016, big year, guys, for film?
I'll let Ethan go first.
Big year? No.
Okay. I had a feeling Ethan would say that. I don't know. I kind of disagree, actually. Oh. I think it was a pretty good year.
A good ass year? Why is that? Like, what type of film? Like, what's your wheelhouse?
Probably small dramas. And I think I'm more so comparing it to maybe the past year. And in that comparison, I think it's an improvement overall. It's just a little more diversity in the types of movies, but it also could be my sense of taste of change. It could be just the types of movies I'm feeling this year particularly, but I think it's a good spread this year for me.
Mm.
Well, that's worth mentioning is that I've heard a lot of things about film being, well, good and bad, and it kind of depends who you ask. If you're talking about, like, big budget nerd movies, there was a bit of a collapse for some people in that side of things, whereas if you are looking at small dramas, that doesn't make as much fanfare, but
you
got some good movies.
I actually do agree with that. Like big blockbuster movies had definitely declined in my book.
Yeah, I guess I'll agree with that. Maybe that's why it doesn't stand out as much to me. It seems like a lot of very good movies. So, like, the average movie, I would say, is probably better than usual. But just nothing big stands out to me. And I like the big boys.
You mean blockbuster-wise?
Yeah, blockbusters. I mean, not necessarily blockbusters because I don't watch any Marvel movies. But, no, yeah, blockbusters. Okay, ooh. Blockbusters. Okay. That's just, it got such a negative connotation now, a blockbuster.
Well, yeah, but isn't that partially because they're shitty? Now, I mean, I feel like the 90s were kind of like a good decade for blockbusters. Maybe that's just because I was like in my 10s.
Yeah. I mean.
Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah.
So last year, I guess to compare directly, we had The Martian. We had Mad Max. Those were two very good blockbusters. This year we had Zootopia.
Was that good? Ray, you actually saw that. That was a children's film,
right? I mean, I enjoyed it. I thought it was really well written, and the plot was good. The animation is decent, not probably not the best of the year, I would say, but, you know, it has a really good, concept for personifying animals and actually making them, I don't know, somewhat relatable to like society and kind of giving a commentary on that, that makes it feel relevant right now, I guess.
Yeah. It's like a BoJack Horseman kind of thing with like everyone is an animal and it's kind of part of what makes them funny.
Yes. But probably more PG than BoJack Horseman.
Only slightly.
Well, yeah. One thing that I feel like we could say 20 weeks into the podcast that we like is we're kind of very script focused as opposed to actor focused, or as opposed to, you know, effects focused. I feel like what makes or breaks a movie for us generally is the script, sometimes the direction to a degree, but I feel like when I have a hard time getting across to somebody why I don't like a movie, it's just because I just didn't like what happened in the movie, or like why, what, you know, the dialogue was, or, you know, how characters were portrayed in terms of like their actions, which is all down to the script as opposed to someone doing a really good job of crying on screen. Maybe that's impressive, you know, as an actor, but it's not that great for me as like an experience. I did make a list of things that I thought we learned about ourselves. Ethan, you had mentioned that what you learned about yourself through this process of doing this podcast is that you've become more negative towards movies.
I've just, since we started, I've definitely noticed that I watch the movie with much more critical eye, because usually most of the movies I've watched were in preparation to record a podcast. So I was like, okay, how am I going to think of this? How am I going to break this down? And then just the process of dissecting movies over, you know, an hour and a half podcast. It's made me a lot more cynical.
It's made you cynical? Do you think that could be a coincidence? Because when I look at the movies that we watched this year, I see that I enjoyed them all until we got to the Seven Samurai, or the Magnificent Seven remake, and then it was extremely hit or miss. But I think that might be because the movies we watched actually were terrible.
Yeah, well, we did a bad thing with the October horror slate we put together, watching all the terrible remakes and sequels. So maybe that really just killed it.
They weren't all bad, though. I mean, we liked the original Evil Dead movies. The original Dawn of the Dead wasn't fantastic, but I enjoyed it. I wasn't cynical about it.
It was mostly the remakes that were terrible.
Well, what about you, Ray? Has listening to our podcast made you more of a cynic about movies?
I would actually say the opposite for me personally, just because going back to the point you said about how you guys might focus a little more on the script or the story, I'm actually kind of on the other end, where I think I might be a little more influenced by direction specifically. And so listening to you guys, it's kind of opened up a little bit, like, more for me to explore and on the story side and kind of critique that a little more. I think that's made me less of a cynic, if anything. I think it makes me appreciate some movies that are maybe not visually as well done as I hoped for, but the story is really strong, and that's, you know, kind of made me think differently about the movie. So, yeah, I don't know. I think as a listener, my natural instinct is that maybe I'm not as hard of a man as you guys, but
that's right.
Wouldn't be possible.
Yeah, I know. I can't live up to that standard. But you guys have maybe made me focus differently on what I haven't really looked at in movies.
Wow, it's all worthwhile now hearing that.
Yeah, we were about to quit.
The most recent like Rogue One episode, that kind of changed it a little bit for me, because I was mostly thinking about just how Rogue One was different from the canon and how it was directed differently and what they did with the characters. But you guys kind of talked about certain like plot holes and maybe things that I don't really put high in my criteria for judging a movie. So, Yeah, I don't know. You guys have kind. You guys didn't make me like Rogue One more, but you made me.
Oh, I hope not.
Yeah.
God, no.
Impossible.
You guys made me critique the story more. And so you guys actually might have bumped it down a peg for me, because I actually did overall enjoy it for the look of it and some of the things it did differently visually. There's still just a lot of problems with the story that, you know, were highlighted in your podcast.
I know you said the last thing, and I said that was made it worth it, but hearing that we ruined Star Wars for you, that's really what's worth it.
I wouldn't say ruin. I still stand by that it's Star Wars. A decent movie.
Man, the fact that you're never going to buy another ticket to a Star Wars movie for me is satisfying.
Warms my belly.
I don't know about that.
Yeah, if we could get Frankie or Anthony to turn in their card and just reject Star Wars forever, or Marvel, or Disney as a whole.
You got Frankie questioning his Marvel fandom on Doctor Strange pretty good, I think.
Oh, okay. That's one thing is we realized, well, I don't know that I realized, but I generally think that this year watching more movies that actually come out, I've been more cynical, I guess, or more critical of the Disney kind of empire and their kind of, like you mentioned, Ethan, how it's kind of like an aim low. They really always aim for like a B minus, you know.
Yeah.
And they probably hit it, and it kind of annoys me the fact that that's always, you know, C plus, B minus.
That's like
what they go for.
Yeah, that's just kind of the highest you could expect now. Or at least that I expect.
I will agree. Right. It just seems that they're always trying to be safe with what they're coming out with now for Star Wars, because it's such, like, I don't know, such a touchy franchise, and it's such a has such a huge fan base that they don't maybe want to ruin it in any small way. But that also means that they're not taking any risks to make it more interesting. So that's, like, my hopes going into Rogue One were far greater than what actually I saw on screen. So I don't know. I still have hope that they'll maybe take more risk in the future, but, you know, like, when more and more of these movies come out, I think it'll just slowly diminish. And listening to something like your guys' podcast, you know, that doesn't reinforce any confidence.
Well, the thing is, like, I almost don't want to blame them, because there's no reason to take risks. They're going to make $1 billion the way they're doing it now. So, like, why would you risk that? It's, you know what? It's the international market's fault. Thanks a lot, China.
Well, it's also, I mean, just the fact that they have like a 12-year plan on all their IPs. So when they know they're going to have Doctor Strange around for, you know, Infinity War number 4 in 2023, they have to just keep all those characters kind of like a holding pattern, just so that they're around all the time.
Yeah, you just have to, like, introduce them, and then, I mean, just have them around for those future movies, so you're not going to really do much in the standalone movies.
Yeah. One thing that we also realized this year is, we'll have to ask Ray about this, but Ethan and I realized that we hate Chris Pratt based on the Magnificent Seven remake.
You know, and it's really funny, because I went back and I was rewatching some what's that show, Parks and Rec. He's so good in that. He just shouldn't have gotten in shape is the problem.
So is it kind of like, the thing is, like, I don't really like Zach Galifianakis in movies that much, because they so often pigeonhole him into playing the kind of, like, fey, clueless idiot character he does. And
yeah,
I think that he's funnier when he's more aggressive, like in his show Between Two Ferns or in some of his stand-up. But he basically never plays that in film. He always plays kind of a version of the character Seth Galifianakis that he does. That he's kind of like his, you know, ambiguously gay brother.
Yeah, and just kind of, he plays a lot of a Dumbo, but it's kind of the opposite of Chris Pratt. Chris Pratt's much funnier when he's playing in Dumbo, not trying to play the hero, for me at least.
Yeah.
I will say it might be the fault of the movie Magnificent Seven, if that might be the only point of reference you guys are going off of, just because I do enjoy him in Guardians of the Galaxy and look forward to the sequel. But I don't know. It's tough because I don't know that I've seen a lot of big movies that he's been in. And from what I gather of pop culture, it does seem like we don't really have movie stars like we used to. And if we do have like male movie stars, like maybe it's him and Ryan Gosling at the moment, mm-hmm. but,
Bradley Cooper.
Nah, Cooper's gone.
Yeah. Well, but he hasn't, I feel like he's fallen off this year.
Yeah. He's had a weird, well, it feels like there's kind of a vacuum for the, classic, almost yeah. like Will Smith, type mm-hmm. who can do a bit of like, you know, he can wisecrack, but he's also just handsome and, you know, not rugged, but, you know, could be a bit of like a, you know, 21st century Harrison Ford type. And yeah. it seems like, you know, when they were casting for the young Indiana Jones, or they're going to reboot that, I know that Bradley Cooper and not Zach Galifianakis, what the hell is this guy we're talking about? Chris Pratt. Both names were thrown in, and I think it kind of was almost just a sense of like, well, who else would it be? Mm-hmm. Channing Tatum? I mean, Jesus.
What happened to Shia? He was our savior.
Well, Shia kind of got stuck in the little buddy roles for a long time, and then everyone was annoyed with him.
Yeah, he's going for more like art house stuff nowadays. I feel like he's not really into doing any big movies that would put him into stardom status.
Yeah, like he was in American Honey. How was he in that, Ray?
Yeah, he was actually great in that, because I think the character is maybe something that's like closer to his personality, or maybe an image of himself that he sees, at least just based from his like public persona. It's kind of like this vagabond dude that just like travels across the country selling magazines to get by, and like he's part of like a crew. So it's got kind of like it's like a road movie, and it's got kind of that like journeyman feel to it. So he's kind of like dirty and just like kind of like a weird character. So I don't know. That's like something up his alley. It seems like he's, you know, doing a lot of stuff like that these days.
Yeah.
And that was one of your top 10 of the year. Yeah.
Yeah. I really liked it. And this kind of goes back to what I said about how I maybe judge movies more on directorial style, or like, just how they approach the concept more so than story. Like the story for this is decent, I would say. It's about a young girl who meets Shia LaBeouf, and she kind of has her own personal drama at home, and she just runs off with him with this magazine crew, and they just go across country selling magazines, and they're like young kids, and it's like about youth culture, hitting the road and just like discovering America. So there's not really too much of a plot to it besides like their personal interactions with each other. But both the leads, which her name is Sasha Lane, and she's like, this is her first movie. Apparently, she was like discovered by the director in like Panama City on the beach or something. And then,
oh yeah,
that's the way to do it.
They just gave her a role. Yeah. So I don't know. It kind of plays into how the movie was directed. It's kind of like documentary style, where they just like put all the actors, and some of them are like real life, like, I don't know, people they found on the streets that they just like put into the cast, and kind of just put them in like the situations that would have, that were shown in the movie, and then, kind of just rolled the cameras, I think. So it's kind of an interesting take on a movie, on a road movie, especially because it feels pseudo like home footage, you know, type stuff, but like mm-hmm. edited in like a real beautiful way. So, yeah.
Wait, I'm just realizing this list you put together, right? This is in order?
Yeah, lists usually go in order.
That's why it's not bullets.
Oh, man. Okay.
Wait, you only see bullets on your end?
No, I'm joking.
Okay.
No, I do think that's one thing that people take for granted. I guess I'm putting this on everybody, where maybe it isn't. But I feel like a lot of people, when they talk about directors that they like, what they're really talking about is more the, you know, the cinematography and the set design and just, you know, the cool shots or the cool music choices. And I feel like what's not appreciated as much is how much a director influences the actors, and how you mm-hmm. can have an actor that's maybe has no talent whatsoever and get a good performance out of them based on the direction. And that's, you know, you can have these actors who you're kind of amazed that they get held in high regard for one movie when you've seen them in something else and they just don't seem to know how to act at all.
Yeah, no, I think you're totally right. That's a huge part of it that I think people don't think about. Because really, the way what you see on screen is just how we judge the actor. And like sometimes just the way that they're told to say a line or the way that they're prepped by a director really changes the performance and like how they're motivated to like approach the role, I guess. So yeah, I don't know. The director here, Andrea Arnold. Yeah. She did a great job with this first time actress. Yeah.
That was what I wanted to see. That was one of the missed by Ethan 2016 list.
The pissed that you missed?
Pissed that I missed.
The pissed that you missed list.
Yeah. That one and The Witch is the other one. But I'll have to remedy that soon because I keep bugging Ray to make me let me watch it in his house.
The one on your list that's the highest rated that we've all seen was Linklater's Everybody Wants Some.
Yeah. Yeah, that's just missed my personal top 10, but I mean, you could easily convince me to have it up there. Like, it came out early this year, so I know you guys didn't get a chance to talk about it.
Yeah, that predates the revamp of the podcast.
Yeah, so I'm glad we get to visit it a little bit. I don't know. I liked it a lot. It's just super fun, and it's like an awesome ensemble. Mm-hmm. And if I mean, I'm a pretty diehard Linklater fan, so I think I was going to like it either way going into it, but it met expectations for me. So
it's funny.
How about you, Eth?
No, yeah, I'm a big Linklater fan too, but I actually wasn't too excited. Maybe I was like trying to psych myself out to not like get overhyped, but the trailers for it were kind of bad. They made it look really stupid, which I think, I mean, it isn't the fault of anyone but whoever cut that trailer. But no, that I like that one a lot. I put that on my number one most likely to rewatch of 2016 because I've been wanting to watch that again lately. Partly because it came out so long ago, but also just because it was, yeah, super fun, really easy to pop into. Linklater is a guy, definitely, like you were talking about, who gets the most out of his actors, I think. And he just got kind of this cast of relative nobodies in this movie, and they're all great.
Yeah, I've heard the both the leads are like already lined up for some really big movies coming up, so we'll probably see a lot of them.
All thanks to Linklater.
Yep. Yeah, I actually rewatched the movie a few times throughout the year, and it really stands up in terms of like just its tone. It feels like the spiritual sequel to Dazed and Confused that we were promised a little bit. And I like that it's a movie about bros, and it's like it's not too toxic, you know, because like I think that could easily like what you said about the trailer, the marketing for the movie definitely made it seem like it's like almost a little too bro-y and mm-hmm. like could cross the line into something that's just unwatchable. And I think that's just like kind of the hard sell for a movie like that. There's just no way to like really cut a trailer for it that does it justice.
Yeah,
do you think that's what he's going for, though?
Well,
like the sense I got, I mean, Ethan, what we did with this movie is almost what we ended up doing with the podcast, is we watched Dazed and Confused, I think, the night before, and then we went, when I was in Austin, we went together and saw Everybody Wants Some. Yeah, so it kind of gave it like a really, you know, tight, you know, the themes that overlapped were kind of strong, and the sense I got from it, and what I liked about it, I think I might not have liked it as a straight fun movie because I don't like fun. But what I liked about both of the movies is they seemed like they weren't, moralizing, and they weren't blunt about it. But it did seem like there was a real undercurrent of not sadness, but that if you took it at face value, maybe you'd miss the message. And the sense I got is like both films have characters who are like well older than the scene that they're involved in. You know, there's in Dazed and Confused, they have like Ben Affleck's character who I think he actually flunks out and it's suggested that he doesn't care because he gets to spend another year in high school. And there's obviously Matthew McConaughey, who's well out of high school, but he's hanging around because, you know, the girls stay the same age. And Everybody Wants Him has the pitcher who's like 30. But he still he never made it in like the minor leagues or the major leagues. So he just wants to do it. And so there's this weird like sense of like that this like kind of not, I guess, kind of mindless, you know, I mean, it is just like partying for the sake of partying, that it's, you know, there is that hint of what's happening tomorrow.
Yeah. But it's almost like when you're in the movie and the characters too, you're not supposed to really be concerned with that, because the movie ends like with the first point of like true responsibility where he actually goes to class, and then it just ends.
Yeah, so, he immediately falls asleep.
He immediately falls asleep in class.
Yeah, I wouldn't say, you know, it's as literal as maybe what the characters are shown doing, but I don't know. The common through line I see through for both movies is maybe the lead characters kind of coming into a situation thinking that they know what everything's about, but then you leave the movie like thinking that they've been stripped of that, not confidence, but stripped of that like assurance about everything. And like now they're kind of in a place where they know nothing, but they're open to like the possibilities of the future.
Yeah.
I know that's like an abstract thing, but it seems like that's what Linklater likes doing a lot in his movies, is kind of, at least with these two, showing a world and all those like kind of party characters and those side characters are like just part of that world, and they influence the whoever the main characters are, and kind of like show them different sides of that world. And then that main character kind of just goes through like little mental journeys to like discover who they are themselves. And in the end, they discover that they don't know who they are, and they're like on a continuous journey to like find out, I guess.
Yeah, he's so damn good at writing characters and like writing their change. And that goes back to what we're talking about, like, you know, focusing on script. All his movies, like if nothing else, the script is so tight. The character motivations and actions throughout are so tight to what they need to be that it makes it, his movies just feel so like so rich and like satisfying to watch. It's not hollow. Like it really is,
yeah,
so
maybe
easily
it's because
could
we
be.
Like we know like people like the characters that he shows. We're like, yeah, we know like a creepo guy who's like into girls that are too young for him. Or like we know
Ray. Like, we all know Ray.
That older. Oh yeah, come on, get out of here. But yeah, so I think he creates this world that we kind of you know relate to, but not 100%. Or it's nostalgic in some way, and it makes it, you know, fun for us on a surface level, and maybe gives us something to think about.
Yeah, it's very true to life, and it's very, I guess what I like about it is that it, you get the sense that you're following the characters from their perspective, but it doesn't force you to think of that situation the way they do. So, I mean, I remember everybody wants a specific element. The guys kind of go clubbing, they kind of go bouncing club to club, and it's the 80s, so they go to like a punk club, and then they go to like a disco, and then they go to a country bar. And the older guy tells him, he's like, hey, you know, he has this kind of speech about or this kind of monologue to a younger guy about, hey, you know, we're kind of like chameleons, we're adaptable. And it's both a funny moment, but it also is kind of a weird moment, because it's like, well, do you have an identity then? And then like when you meet somebody, what is that going to mean? And towards the end, he kind of takes a kind of a side route, and he goes for a girl who kind of gets him more than, you know, everything he's been going for. But at the same time, he's, you know, he's still been having his fun. So it's a very gray, not like morality wise, but it's gray in terms of life is messy. You know, he's not like a straight punk and that's his whole life. Mm-hmm. He's kind of taken a dip of every little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. From a movie like that, that we can all relate to very much, to a movie that I wasn't able to relate to as a white straight man, but Moonlight, I think, I see number one on your list, Ray, I think was probably also the best movie in my eyes this year. I know, Jed, you didn't see it, so you don't have to talk about it too much, but...
Well, I read that excellent review that you wrote about it.
Hey, now.
I read that, too.
Hey, now. Two readers. Wow.
I like the idea of it being a kind of doing a kind of a clever gimmick, I guess, where you're just visiting the same guy three different parts of his life and seeing, you know... Yeah. The gap in between those moments, I guess, is that just understood of where he's gone?
Yeah, I mean, it is literally broken down into like the three acts, and he's like his three phases of his own character, where he's little in the beginning when he's a young kid and he gets picked on for being small, and then what's the middle one, Ray? It's his actual name, right?
His actual name is Chiron.
Chiron, yeah, where he's kind of discovering himself. And who he is, and then the last character that he is called Black, which was another nickname he had, and that's when he's trying to fulfill kind of a Black stereotype that he never really was supposed to be a part of. But it's broken down in like three distinct acts to show those three phases of his life. That's a great cinematography movie.
Yeah, the structure is pretty interesting. I think with each act, it just shows progressively how he gets, pun intended, hardened by the world, I guess, just because of his circumstances. and it really shows his transformation each time it transitions into another act. And it's each time it's a little jarring because your imagination kind of fills in the gaps, you know, where his life, like what happens in his life between those spaces. And we really kind of see what effect, people had on him, whether it's positive or negative, and then, what effect he has had on himself mentally. So, I don't know. I watched this movie twice. Yeah, it's my favorite movie of the year, and it's just beautifully shot. I think, shot in Florida, and you know, I don't get to see a lot of movies set in Florida, but
not enough.
Did you see really The Punisher? Well. The Punisher was filmed in Tampa.
I did not.
Or Idle Hands? Did anyone see Idle
Hands?
You're
missing a lot.
Visit that. I know, man. I really got to catch Ghostbusters, The Punisher. I'm adding it to the list. Of must watch.
Moonlight, though, too, is it kind of exemplifies the year just because it's such a small story of just one kid's growing up, you know, being Black and gay in kind of the ghetto, but it's just shot so beautifully and structured so interestingly that it makes it a much more impactful story as a whole, which I think, I mean, most of the movies on your list are small stories, like you said, at the beginning, you like those little dramas. I think that was just kind of what stood out this year in general.
So is that both of your number one movie?
Yeah, I would say so. Just like I said, it might not be the one I'm gonna come back to most often, because I like Everybody Wants Some. I definitely watch that again just because it's a lot more fun. But I just think if you were to pick a best movie, I would say that just has checks all the boxes there.
And I hate agreeing with Ethan, so it's good if we both agree on it. Yeah,
I had a hard time putting together what was my top movie of the year, because I saw, I think, out of the movies we saw new this year, I liked very few of them. Especially towards the last half of the year. I mean, starting with like The Magnificent Seven, then we saw Blair Witch, then we saw Doctor Strange, then Arrival, Nocturnal Animals, Elle, and Rogue One. The only one of those I liked was half of Nocturnal Animals and Elle.
I forgot Blair Witch came out this year. Boof.
You blocked it out of your mind.
I forgot you guys had watched that.
Yeah, and so I think that left me with the movie I liked the most, I think, that I saw this year was Anthropoid, which was the Czech resistance assassination attempt of what was it? I can't remember what the guy's name was now. Heinrich
von
Reinhardt something. Some fucking Nazi.
Some Nazi name. That didn't come out this year though, did it?
No, it did. That was this year.
Oh, okay.
Well, it was 2016, so not this year. It was
Yeah, we're in the future.
The year we're discussing. Yeah.
Gotcha.
No, that's the problem is that I think I saw early in the year I saw Anomalisa, but that was a 2015 movie that I guess this was re-released or whatever. Or maybe I'm just
Yeah, that's one of those that were like right on the line kind of things.
Yeah.
I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of like, what was the worst movie you saw this year? Ethan, don't answer. I know what yours is. Great. What was your worst film? Is that on this list? Is this all the movies you saw, or is this only the ones you liked?
No, these are the only ones that I at least had something I liked about them.
Oh, okay.
So there's 50-ish movies that I liked this year. I don't know. I saw Sausage Party at South by Southwest when it was still like a work in progress, and I did not enjoy it at all. And I don't know if that would change. I think it's possible it would change if I saw it again, but I don't know. I was hoping to like it. So maybe it's a mix of my expectations and also seeing it like not completely finished, even though the story was finished, but some of the animation wasn't 100% yet, so it's hard for me to judge it completely, but I just thought the story was a little too silly. I mean, oh yes, it's a Seth Rogen movie, so of course it's not going to be like anything complicated, but
it's like talking like food too, right?
Yeah, it's talking food. The main characters are a hot dog and a hot dog bun who are just trying to fuck, basically. And they're like stuck in their packaging. And, you know, I will say that it's a valid attempt at like, giving like perverse social commentary on like, religion in a weird way. Just cause they like all the food, each one has like its own beliefs and like they kind of like form a society where they like are kind of looking at humans as these like deities. So they're always like trying to like rebel or like find ways to please like the humans. And then they find out that humans are just eating them. So they like go batshit insane. And, you know, like, from that plot line, it sounds like it might be a little interesting, but I just don't think it was well.
It sounds like a really good movie, actually.
Yeah, that's what I thought too going into it. Actually, I honestly had high hopes for it, and maybe it just didn't meet them. But like, you know, the jokes are just mediocre to me. They're just like maybe C minus, like Seth Rogen style jokes. So,
like, have you ever noticed how a hot dog looks kind of phallic?
I don't know.
That's gold.
That's a good point.
Ethan, what's your worst movie of the year?
Oh. That came out this year, I guess it has to be Blair Witch. That was possibly one of the worst movies I've ever seen. We're talking the new Blair Witch, not the original Blair Witch, which is an excellent film.
No, that was equally terrible.
Oh, I will say I did watch the first act of Suicide Squad. And that's most of all
out?
I could get through. I watched it at home.
You fell asleep?
So, I walked out of my house, yes.
You just left it playing?
Yeah, I just left it playing because I couldn't stand another frame of it. So I just had to run out.
Oh, but, so yeah, was that then the worst movie you saw this year? You didn't even finish watching?
Yeah, I guess that would be. But, you know, I didn't finish it all the way. And I don't plan to, which is pretty rare for me. That's another movie that I had high hopes only because of the director attached to it, who's David Ayer, and he did a cop drama with Jake Gyllenhaal. The name escapes me right now, but that was
End
really
of Watch?
Good. And End of Watch, yeah.
Oh, yeah,
that's right.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, that movie is great, and it's doing a lot of interesting things visually, and I thought, you know, he would apply that to this, but I think it's a mix of both the studio kind of putting too many hands on it and kind of transforming it from the what I hear in the press. So, yeah, I don't know. Disappointing. It seemed like a cool concept with like some decent characters, and the trailers made it look kind of cool, but it, yeah, just a dud like most people said it was.
Ooh, I've got a,
yeah,
Joe, you can say your least favorite movie, but then I've got another entry.
Okay, I don't know. I guess I by default I would have to say Blair Witch also, but I think what's disappointed me is just how, you know, one thing we talked about this year is the concept of being off board, which is obviously not a phrase, but it just means the opposite of being on board. And I was surprised at how many films this year I watched and I was just off board through the entire thing. You know, Rogue One was one of those. Doctor Strange wasn't quite the same way, and Arrival wasn't quite the same way, but Magnificent Seven also was a movie that, well, actually, that's not fair to say. I actually kind of slightly enjoyed that one as I watched it, and then, like, I guess what I hate, I'll just wrap up, my worst of 2016 is just every movie that feels like empty calories. That's just like, as soon as you stop watching the movie, that's the end of the fun to be had with it, as opposed to other movies. Like, every time I think of Michael Shannon in Nocturnal Animals, it makes me happy again, because he's so good in it, and I would watch it again just for his character, and I love that. I love that whole, the story within a story in that movie, but so many movies, and I think that's, you know, again, what I hate about Disney is I feel like what they're aiming for is just basically 2 hours, give us your money. If you ever want to, you know, feel good about this movie again, come see it again. But if not, who cares? We've got another version of it coming out next year.
It's the McDonald'sification of film. You know what you're going to get.
Yeah.
And it's going to fill you up, but it's not going to leave you happy.
Yeah, but it's almost like McDonald's mixed with, like, the Chinese food stereotype, which I've never understood, because I've always found Chinese food to be kind of filling, but the whole, like, oh, 20 minutes later, you know, it's like you never ate anything.
I could see that. I forgot this movie came out this year, but definitely, I would say the most disappointing movie from 2016 for me is Deadpool.
Really?
Yeah, I had pretty high hopes, because everyone was like, oh, it's changing the game. And
yeah, rated R.
Yeah, rated R. I love rated
superhero
R.
Superhero comedy.
Yeah, and I should have realized that I don't... I should have remembered how much I hate Ryan Reynolds and his brand of humor.
Ryan Reynolds was the last... the previous Chris Pratt, the guy who they were also going to pull from, you know, comedy, you know, bona fides, and they're going to make him into a, you know, an action star with Green Lantern and... I don't know whatever else he was in.
But the only thing about him, not that it was good, but he kind of kept the same personality throughout, at least. Like, he was always kind of the cool guy in, like, Van Wilder, and I think that's the only movie he ever made before that.
It seemed like a good fit.
Waiting.
Because it was...
Waiting. Yeah.
Waiting, yeah, exactly. He kind of played that same character in Blade Trinity, which was a uniquely terrible film.
But yeah,
I've never been a big fan of his, and it's funny that you mentioned Magnificent Seven and Deadpool, because those are two movies that I did see that I did leave off my list and that I just totally forgot about because I don't know, they didn't really stick with me at all. Like Deadpool specifically, like you said, it's rated R. You know, it has like cursing, and it's like, oh, that's like shiny and new for like a Marvel movie, but in the end, like, it's just like an atypical, like, superhero origin story that is like, oh, here's how he got like his whole identity, and here's his superpowers, and look, he's going to save the girl in the end. Like, it's just going through the motions, like you said, with some of these movies this year.
I didn't even finish that movie, but
jeez,
looking back,
I find it hard not to finish a movie
sometimes. It was right after there was like a 5-minute sex scene, orgy montage. So once that was done, so was I. Got what I needed out of that movie.
We suddenly had no interest in the movie after that point. Just wanted to take a nap.
I started crying a little bit. It's uncontrollable.
Well, what I mean, would you say what are some maybe some movies that people should see that they didn't see this year?
Mm-hmm. Well, someone put together a lovely video that does exactly that. His name is Ray.
Well, what
that's me.
What's on there?
So one of the movies on there that I would say is number one of that mini list is The Fitz, which is actually my number 7 overall for the whole year. So it's a pretty, I don't know, interesting movie in that it's another quiet movie, just how I like them. But, you know, it's really well directed. It's like kind of eerie and it's haunting. It's about a tomboy who is a boxer because she's doing it with her older brother. She's like about, I think, I want to say she's about 12 or so. Cause she's like right. She hasn't hit puberty yet, which is kind of part of the story. Cause it's a coming of age tale. And so she sees her school's dance team and she wants to join that. And so she starts like making friends with other young girls and slowly trains and becomes better at dancing, but she kind of has her own quirks with it just because she comes from the school of boxing, so it's like a little more forceful. But the big like concept twist in the movie is that people like in the school start like dropping into these seizure like spasms randomly, and and like they have no idea what the cause of it is. And it kind of gets really creepy, and you know what seems like a really nice, quiet story becomes kind of like one that you're confused about, and you're like fixated on, but you're like totally mystified, which I didn't really get until like the very end of the movie, that it was kind of like a metaphor just for her going through this like time of puberty where everyone around her was maybe like kind of hitting that mark already or like ahead of her, and she's like the only one that hasn't gotten one of these like seizures, and like she thinks like everyone's faking it or it's like some weird kind of conspiracy, like where girls are pretending they're going through seizures just to fit in. And it like becomes just a really interesting take that on a coming of age tale that I've just never really seen before. So just for that alone, I thought it was innovative enough to really I don't know, be in my top 10. So, it's also just beautifully shot. There's like swooping, camera movements when she's, like dancing and training. And there's like a little bit of humor in it. It's a pretty, I guess, nonverbal movie, but, when, you know, they do talk or when there is something big that happens, you know, it's really, it makes its mark because it kind of breaks that silence. Yeah.
What about you, Eth? What you got anything that maybe people wouldn't have seen?
Yeah, I would say probably the weirdest movie I saw all year would be Knight of Cups. It's like a non, what'd you say?
The Dark Knight of Cups?
Yeah, interestingly, installers Christian Bale. And I made that joke many times while watching the movie.
I just came up with it.
Yeah, it's really a difficult joke to make.
That's weird, because we watched that movie together, and I think I just ignored your jokes.
And yeah, I was whispering in your ear the entire time. Hey, this is like Dark Knight of Cups. Hey. It's like the Dark Knight Cups Rises.
So this is a guy who's heavily in his cups?
Yeah. Basically.
Which means drunk.
Yeah, I don't even know. I don't know. It doesn't have great reviews, so that kind of influences my memory of the quality of it. But it's a Terrence Malick movie, and it's just kind of telling the story of a screenwriter in Hollywood, and just basically through his relationships, mostly with like his past lovers, just kind of. It's just not narrative at all. I don't even really know what it's trying to say. Mm-hmm. But it's really interesting to watch because it's just kind of shot almost much like a dreamlike state. The camera's always moving around, swooping around, and it's all what do you call it? Like narration with like very minimal interaction between the characters happening on screen, more happening in like memories as if he's reading like a book of his life. But yeah, you saw it with me, Ray. Any did you like it?
Yeah, no, I mean, I guess if you like the more recent Terrence Malick stuff, then you'll probably like it. I also have kind of mixed feelings about it because, yeah, it's shot beautifully, just like all of his movies, and that's probably the best part of it to me. I'm not sure that I enjoy that narrative where it kind of just is...
Yeah, I feel like that would make me anxious. But, like, I sometimes get anxious if I don't know where it's going, because I feel like it's like when you're in a meeting and you don't get a sense that it's ever going to end.
You're stuck in traffic.
Yeah,
that drives me nuts.
There's a little bit of that feeling in this, I'd say. And it's like overly poetic when it does do the narration for me. So like it doesn't really give me much to hold grasp onto in terms of story. So and like usually I'm okay with that, but it kind of crossed the line a little bit for me.
I will say I still
watch his movies when they come out though. So
yeah, I mean, yeah, it helps that, you know, Terrence Malick's name's on it, but it, you can almost watch it as long as you kind of know all these things going into it. You can almost watch it as like a palate cleanser to a normal, you know, narrated movie or a normally structured movie, just because it's, you know, you're going into it. I was at least expecting a movie like that. And about halfway through, you kind of let go and you're like, okay, this is just kind of going all over the place. And I'm just going to sit here and like kind of let it happen. And it's just a totally different experience watching a movie, especially now with the podcast where I'm like trying to break it down in my head and trying to keep track of the entire structure. It's almost just like you're watching like a piece of art just on the wall moving in front of you. And there's not really any set goal or at the end of the watching it, you're not even really maybe supposed to have the same kind of opinions you would about a movie, and like whether it's good or bad, it's just kind of like an experience. So
I think that's a good point. I mean, it's an abstract it's like abstract portraits of relationships, I guess, of this guy's life. And I think the movie he did before this is kind of similar. I can't remember what it's called, but
is that Tree of Life he did?
No, not that one. Way more like recent. Yeah,
I haven't kept up with too much.
But yeah, I don't know. He has another movie coming out though, with that's set in the Austin music scene.
Ooh,
so
yeah, probably
that might be something to look forward to. It has, I think, it has Christian Bale, Ryan Gosling, Natalie Portman. I don't know, a lot of big names.
Ooh, so pretty movie. We'll see. Very pretty.
Yeah. No, I think a picture just came out for like a couple days ago. So, yeah, I don't know. It's a very attractive looking movie for sure.
I would say one film that I would go, I think, under most people's radar, because I only found out about it because it was on Netflix, but it did come out this year and probably just went fairly quickly into Netflix. It was a very good, you know, catch on TV movie, and it was The Trust, which was with Nicolas Cage and Elijah Wood play two cops.
Oh yeah,
in Vegas. Yeah, and they stumble upon some safe. I don't know how they stumble upon it, now that I'm thinking of it, but they get it into their head that there's got to be something immensely valuable just because how advanced and huge the safe is. And the entire rest of the movie is pretty much them just planning, because they have dead-end jobs and, you know, they don't give a shit, how to break into this thing, and then the actual break-in. And it's very, you know, you're in the moment and you're just kind of with these two guys. It's not fantastic, but it really, I actually turned it on just because I was checking the, I was trying to set up speakers for my TV, because I got some used speakers from like a thrift store and an amp, and I was trying to work it out with my TV. It didn't end up working, but I ended up watching the whole movie just because it kind of, you know, kind of grabbed me. And they're just, it's hard to stop looking at Nicolas Cage. He's kind of wacky.
Talk about a pretty
movie.
Yeah,
I love him. And you, I might actually watch that now that you kind of reminded me of it. I didn't really see a lot of marketing for it. I remember seeing like one thing about it online. So, yeah.
It reminds me of, I guess, the way, I think there's something different about short films and features, but there are some features that seem to have the sensibility of a short film. And I guess if you have, like, for instance, like a small cast and a small, very centralized location, and kind of a fairly, you know, you can count on your hand how many beats the story has. So that's the way it felt. It felt like a long, short film.
Interesting.
Hmm. I didn't even hear about that one. Do you like Elijah Wood?
No,
though?
I didn't either. Elijah Wood, gotta love Elijah Wood. Well, I mean, you don't have to, but...
You gotta.
Okay, okay. Well, I'm thinking, what is the... we gotta figure out who the hardest man of the year is. And I didn't write a list down. So I'll have to think of this on my feet. But Ethan, did you write one down? Who the hardest man of 2016 in film was?
Yeah, I got a couple ideas. I'll acquiesce to our guest, though. He can do his first.
Cause put him on the spot.
I think he's going to have the same one as me, and I want to be able to change.
Well, I will plug in another video, actually. The video I made that kind of lists the top characters that I think would best back you up in a fight from this year are close, very similar to my potential Hard Men of the Year nominees. So I ended up choosing the Handmaiden Girls.
God damn it.
Because is that who you had?
That was one of my options, but I knew you would take it.
That was one of the potentials?
It's a good choice.
Yeah, so they Lady made me hard. Hideko and and Suki. Yeah, if you watch The Handmaiden, they are
Suki?
Completely
like from
badass.
Jersey Shore?
Yeah, Suki. Yeah, she transitioned into a Korean film. I don't know.
That's pretty great. Amazing.
She's really great. Yeah, I don't know.
I always knew she had it in her.
I so want that to be true.
Yeah, if you see her IMDb, it's all over the place. It's crazy. I kind of cheated on my Hard Men of the Year. It's a duo, and they're female. So, I don't know. They're kicking ass in the movie. And
Or are they?
The movie's great. Yeah, or are they?
It's a twist in the movie, potentially, folks.
So, you have to watch.
Ethan, what was yours that you had several? You were cheating by not actually picking one?
Yeah, that was a good choice. That was one of the ones I was going to pick. As far as movies that came out in 2016, there's some pretty good hard men to choose from. You had another one on your list here from your video, Ben Foster and Hell or High Water was a good one.
Also, dude, I love Ben Foster.
He's so great. Mm-hmm. He's great in that movie, and I just wanted to make sure I mentioned that movie because it was one of my favorites too. But maybe it's recency bias, but I'm going to go with another duo. Donnie Yen and his buddy in Rogue One. Because I love the fact that they're a gay couple in so many fans' minds. And they're fucking... They're kicking ass in that movie.
They were fucking.
Yeah, they were fucking and they were kicking ass.
they were... probably the couple of the top characters in that ensemble for me, I would say.
They were the best part of that Star Wars movie. Yeah. I think we could all agree.
I wish there were more of them.
The robot was nice. Outside of that,
robot was
I don't
cool.
think there was anyone else to even give a shit about.
Yeah, and to be the best part of a Star Wars movie, that's a pretty big deal. So
yeah.
Yeah, true.
Give him credit for that. Baze was his guy, his buddy's name with the big old gun in his back. Look kind of like a StarCraft
Baze
character.
Malbus, I think.
Yeah, Baze Malbus.
And the other guy's name was Chiwetel Ejiofor.
Incredible. So did you think of any out, Jared? Or are you just going to
Yeah, I had... Well, over? The one that kind of was the default one in my head was Michelle from Elle, who is... she's... The opening scene of the movie, she's raped, and she... really doesn't give much of a fuck about it. She just kind of goes about her life. Yeah, she's extremely hard. You know, she's really a bulldog with everyone in her life. She kind of pushes them around. She's fairly selfish, and I really love asshole victims. Like someone who something terrible happens to them in the movie, but on the whole, they're not a good person generally. So kind of like a Scrooge-type character. Because it... I guess I like that it confuses my emotions. I don't know how to feel about them. Mm-hmm. But I liked her character a lot. She, I don't think she cries once in the movie, despite, you know, this kind of traumatic event happening to her. She eventually confronts, you know, her attacker, and it doesn't go the way that I think the trailers, like you were mentioning, Ray, with misleading trailers, the trailer suggests it's going to be some kind of cat and mouse game where, you know, mm-hmm. she's going to catch mm-hmm. him and then, you know, maybe pull some kind of revenge, you know, violence on him. But it doesn't go that way. It actually goes to a very confusing place for me. But I don't think the movie would work at all if you didn't have a really hard, spined character at the center of it. So I think that she'd win it for me for the year.
Yeah, I think that's a great pick. I actually got to see that movie a couple of weeks ago, and it definitely complicates your feelings about the movie. And her character is pretty strong, and I like the actress Isabelle Huppert. I think she does like a really great job at this pretty intense role. So yeah, that's an awesome pick.
Hey, my pick was good too.
No, actually wasn't.
Mine was kind of lame. I agree. Mine was lame.
Well, Ethan, excluding Ray from this, well, I guess Ray can be involved too. I did want to just bring it back to just our podcast itself, because part of what we're doing is trying to not just watch, you know, keep up, you know, the rat race of everything that's coming out, but also mm-hmm. catch older films that we missed initially that we, you know, kind of were in the back of our mind of like how we, you know, we've added a few this year, you know, the piss that were missed list. So is there anything this year that we got to see that really felt like, wow, I'm really glad I finally got around to that?
Yeah, definitely that Beef Shot. Basic Instinct.
Basic Instinct. Dude, that movie really kind of
bucket list
hit me. I was surprised at how, it was just very, it was very tight. It was a real good, you know, kind of grabbed you and, just kind of you're along for the ride. And I kind of don't remember the last time I saw a new movie that pulled that same kind of effect on me.
Yeah. And I would say also, Cape Fear too did the same thing. It's just, I don't know, something about those 90s thrillers.
Yeah, I don't know the last time I saw a thriller that was that that gripping, really? That tense.
Yeah, I would say Cape Fear is probably actually the movie I was most thankful we saw. Actually, also Blair Witch. I'd never seen Blair Witch, the original. I'm really glad I finally saw
God
that.
Damn it.
What a great, excellent movie that was.
If I could go back in time, the only thing I would change in my life is seeing that movie. I really am glad to. The only Akira Kurosawa movie I've seen is now Seven Samurai.
Oh yeah,
I feel like I have to see more in 2017.
Yeah,
that one in the Magnificent Seven. I love finding. I feel like there are very few westerns. Like, because it's such a small genre, especially like classic good ones. So I was really pleased to have seen The Magnificent Seven also.
Yeah, good call. Seven Samurai. Really glad I saw that. Probably the best movie I saw all year. It was like a 70-year-old movie.
Ray, was there anything that you thought to watch because we were talking about it?
Let's see. I mean, I did watch some movies that influenced movies that came out this year. I did watch Basic Instinct
yes.
as well, because of Paul Verhoeven and, you know, just him directing L. Kind of, mm-hmm. I just wanted to revisit his work. I watched another movie of his called The Fourth Man, which I think that and Basic Instinct are probably closely tied together in terms of some themes, and then and it is really interesting because those are or The Fourth Man is his I think I want to say Danish movie that he did like way early in his career, so it's kind of more experimental and it's like a little more graphic on the male side of things. It's it has a gay character and he like seduces a woman to try to get to her like other lover in a weird way. So it's a interesting take on a love triangle.
The classic okie doke.
Oh, yeah.
Very advanced okie doke.
Good for the goose is good for the gander.
And then you
I hope
guys
you get a gander
about...
of that goose.
Oh, there's yeah. You guys
are stride now.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez. Let's see what else. I didn't rewatch Seven Samurai, but I do love that movie. And if you guys are trying to watch more Kurosawa films, Rashomon is, I think it was done earlier in his career, mm-hmm. and is probably another one of his classics. And what else? We didn't get a chance to talk about La La Land, but that was based on a French movie that I actually like a lot more than La La Land.
Yeah, I think Anthony wanted to talk about that, so we might have to see that, and then maybe we'll talk about it with him.
Well, didn't he write a piece on it?
I know Adam. Well, Adam wrote a review on it, but I didn't read it because, like, the second paragraph of his review is, don't read this if you're going to see the movie. So I'm keeping myself in the dark about that.
Nice.
But I think I will see that soon. I don't know. My wife wants to see Jackie, too, about Jackie Robinson. So I might see that also.
About Jackie Joyner-Kersee, actually.
Yeah.
I just saw that one with Ray. That movie was excellent.
That was a good one?
I think so. Mm-hmm. Natalie Portman.
Good old Natalie Portman. Liked her.
I just actually went back and watched Black Swan the other night because my wife was like re-obsessed with Natalie Portman. And she's an underrated actress.
She has the greatest eyebrow acting I've ever seen. Like, the way her eyebrows like furrow, like she does these things that I didn't know humans could do with their eyebrows. And like, she could, I don't know, if you just had a close-up of just her eyebrows for 2 hours, I think it'd still be a great movie.
Yeah, and good mouth work, too. She's great. That wasn't meant as a joke.
Well, is there anything else we want on to stamp onto 2016? Or something we don't want to see happen in 2017? Or I guess do, if we want to be positive.
Well, I realized the thing missing from 2016 that 2015 had and 2017 will also have is a Fast and Furious movie.
Hell yes. Yes.
Yes. So, I'm glad we're all in agreement in that.
I do think one thing we have to add to our brand is that there's no movie too smart and no movie too dumb. Because a lot of podcasts I see, they kind of tightly, you know, I mean, especially because it's online. I follow on Twitter, these guys. And so it's very often, it's like very much in the spectrum of like Marvel movies and anything that's roughly as smart or stupid as Marvel movies. So, you know, Independence Day, stupider. For instance. But I like that we kind of go the full gamut. And I really like the Fast and Furious franchise, as stupid as it is. And I think I like it the more... They seem like they are taking some amount of risk in that how stupid can they make it? It seems like that's really always on the table when they're writing the script.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, no, that's exactly why I like the franchise too, especially the more recent movies, because they really leaned into what they're good at. Mm-hmm. So like in the last three movies, I think they just stopped caring about reality physics. And the world of physics because they just do things that are like impossible in this world with their cars. Like think about the first movie where they're just racing each other for pink slips for like each other's cars. Now they're like an international crime fighting syndicate and it's like 100 and they're like going 0 to 100.
That there's also, they are very clearly taking elements of like telenovela style, like soap opera. So they've got, you know, the character, Michelle Rodriguez's character had like amnesia, and that was like a B plot of the last two, I think. And this new one, it looks like for whatever reason, Vin Diesel turns evil, or maybe he gets amnesia or whatever. But I can't wait for one of them to die and like come back as a cyborg or something and just keep it going.
There's everything's on the table.
Realm of possibilities wide open for sure.
Yeah, that's what you want.
Well, Ethan, It's come to that time. Do we have any fuck yous for 2016? Big fuck yous.
Big fuck yous of the year.
For the year.
Yeah, we've got a few. One I just thought of just now. Fuck you to Ryan Reynolds. just for always being himself.
For Deadpool or generally?
Yeah, no, just in general. I mean, Deadpool is what brought it to mind because he's ruining what I guess could have been a really good movie for me. So, yeah, he gets the first one. Second one will go to our podcasting software for continually fucking up our posts the past few times, but I think we got that straightened out. So
yeah, kind of.
We can leave that one to rest then.
The thing is, we came up with the fuck you concept pretty recently, but we should throw one way back to that fucking wiener from bloodydisgusting.com who gave a amazingly great review to Blair Witch.
Hell yeah.
Even though I think the director had like financial ties. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Well, they did write in the review something like that Bloody Disgusting was like a producer of the director's other films.
Ooh.
And worked with him a lot. And what was that guy's name? Brad Miska. That's... Yeah, big fuck you to him.
Not cool, bro.
No, not cool at all.
Yeah, that's a good one. We could end it there.
All right, we can end it there. Well, thank you, listener, for finally coming on the podcast and meeting us face to face.
And I know what we look like.
Yeah, no.
How handsome we are.
Yeah. I can see it. It's jarring. I can almost not look at you guys while doing this. So, but no, it's pretty awesome. I'm looking forward to what you guys talk about for the next year.
Yeah, next
this year, I guess.
Next week we're going to have, I believe, Frankie on to talk about 15 flicks that you got to see in 2017. So if you have something that you want to hear talked about in 2017, write to us at hardmentoplease.com or hit us up on Twitter at hardmentoplease. Subscribe and rate on iTunes and Stitcher, and tune back in next week.
Brand new year, brand new us, except for we're exactly the same.
Exactly. All right. Good night. We love you, listener.
Love you.